So she ran it by him and she got back, said they're mad about the idea. They want to book you at the top of the Rio Hotel in the Voodoo Lounge. So I said, well, wow, okay, great. I got off the phone. I was all elated. And I go, oh, no, wait a minute. I don't have a band. Haven't written any songs.
Can't sing.
I can't.
I'm old. You'll go a long way.
Welcome to episode 2 of the Shuttle Pod Show. Today we have very special guest, Vulcan Ambassador Saval, Mr. Gary Graham. We'll be answering some of the questions you've sent in to us, doing some Star Trek trivia, and much more. I'm Erica LaRose, and now for our hosts, Connor Trenier and Dominic Keating.
Hey, hey.
Hey, hey, hey.
How's it, Dom?
Hey, brother. Good to see you.
Likewise.
Looking good in the EV suit.
Nice to meet you. I can barely breathe.
Filling that out, mate. Erica, darling, nice to see you.
Nice to see you guys.
Hi, lovely as ever.
You guys do too.
You can still say that in space these days, can you?
Looking lovely as ever.
I think so. All right. This week, we are absolutely delighted to have in the pod with us a really good friend. He was on the show with us. We know him from the conventional circuit, aka the circus. You'll know him as Ambassador Saval. He's a terrific actor, a journeyman actor, or as Jeremy Irons would call him, a bloody good mate. Gary Graham.
Gary.
Thank you. Hi, hey, guys.
Man, thanks for coming. Nice.
Hi,
thanks for coming. Thanks
I'm
for
happy to be here, guys.
Yeah, terrific.
As George Burns used to say, my age, I'm happy to be anywhere. Anyway, that's
I'm getting to the George Burns years in life, I got to tell you.
I can see them from here.
Distance.
So you've flown down, haven't you? You've moved out of L.A.
I understand. I escaped from L.A.
Cheers, by the way.
Great.
I know it's not quite five o'clock.
What is this?
Bourbon from Angel's Envy.
Yes, God bless. we're shameless, aren't we?
Cheers from here.
Yes.
Cheers.
Cheers. I fly the ship better with a couple of envies in me.
Not bad.
So tell us about the move. You went from L.A. to Spokane.
Yes.
In the height of it all.
In the height of the plague.
Yeah. Why Spokane?
Why not? My wife's family is from there, and I've also have a good friend from college for many, many years. I've flown up and just spent time with him. Right. We do little film projects. He's from my old college days of acting. And
that the chap you went to China with?
Yes.
You were talking about that earlier when they were backstage.
Yeah, Don Hamilton.
Right. Got arrested twice in China.
Arrested twice, or as they say, detained.
Detained.
For a long period of time.
I think the
it wasn't official, though. It was kind of an informal arrest.
An invitation.
And tell us, what have you been up to? I know you've got a Star Trek band, haven't you?
I do.
Tell us about the band.
Came about by accident, really. I was in conversation with my convention agent. She wanted to know what I need, working out the details of this. And she says, oh, and you have a band, don't you? And I said, I thought about the Thursday night jams that I have where local miscreants kind of stumble in on various hallucinogens or whatnot. And we try to piece together some 3-bar blues. And I said, why do you ask? Yes, why do you ask? And she says, well, they pay a lot of money. And I said, yes, I've got a band. I've got a Star Trek band.
I was going to say, this is the you can ride horses question, isn't it?
Yeah. Can you juggle while riding a horse?
Can you roll a blade and ride a horse at the same time?
The answer is yes, I can do it.
Hell yeah.
Absolutely.
Chew gum too.
We were 3 months out from this appearance. And I said, well, yeah, I've got to, I'm thinking quick. I got to wait. Yeah. We do classic rock tunes that we already know, and I've written a bunch of sexy, funny Star Trek lyrics that pertain to the episode. And we're called the Sons of Kirk, and she's laughing, and she's going, oh, that's great. Let me run it by him. So she ran it by him, and she got back to me after a couple of weeks and said they're mad about the idea. They want to book you at the top of the Rio Hotel in the Voodoo Lounge. So I said,
For a whole gig?
Three nights. Oh. And I said, well, wow, okay, great. I got off the phone. I was all elated. And I go, oh, no, wait a minute. I don't have a band.
I haven't
written any songs. So I had a very
can't sing. I'm old. You'll go a long way.
But other than that, I threw it together and wrote the songs.
Good for you.
Got my musician friends to join me, and we rehearsed and showed up.
Now, who else is in the band? Are they other actors in from Star Trek? Or just,
no, you know, just no, mates? I'm the only one. When I reach for straws, man, it's a short throw. I just said, hey, man, my buddy's a lead guitarist in various bands,
right.
Mike Thompson. Mark Rivera, a bass player, a singer extraordinaire, and Neil Mazanowski, who's our drummer. And
shout out to Neil.
There you go, Neil. Yeah. Right on, dude.
Don't we have a couple of tracks somewhere in the way? I think so.
Oh, we do.
Yeah.
Oh, let's hear some of that.
I think
that'd be fun.
We've got them in the computer.
What do you got? What's the song?
It's called No Seatbelts on the Enterprise, I believe.
Absolutely one of my favorites.
One of the hits?
I wrote it out of my confusion when I was watching Star Trek early on. I thought, they get in these wars and they're taking photon hits and bouncing around. They're kind of swaying and getting maybe thrown out of their seat. And I thought, you know, can you say seatbelts? I mean, just a thought, seatbelts might prevent people from getting hurt.
I went to my first audition for the part and went in there rollicking like that. And they looked
well,
at
we,
me.
We actually had to take a shake class. No, truly.
Okay. We're all shaking different.
We're all going left. You know, Marvin Rush, our DP, was like, no. You've all got to do it in unison. It's like a choreography here, people.
And some actors on a lazy day just go, Or just.
And I was a good shaker.
If they're not feeling it.
Yeah. So they get cut out of the scene, of course.
Exactly. Well, let's hear it.
You do a battle with the Klingons or a not so friendly ship. The disruptor cannons blast in.
Oh, yeah.
And you're taking quite a hit.
And how?
Getting thrown around the bridge while it's flashed before your eyes.
Oh, it's good. Lift.
No seatbelts on the Enterprise.
No secrets on the Enterprise.
Thank you. Thank you.
Oh, yeah.
That's good.
I love it. It's really good.
Oh, yeah. The thumbs are out. That's a good sign.
No seatbelts on the Enterprise.
Yeah.
Woo. All right. Groovy.
You have a great voice.
What do you
do? That's funky stuff.
Do you play guitar?
I play guitar and sing and play some harmonica.
As a bit of a gearhead, what do you have? What do you play?
Oh, that one was played through my, it was the telly.
Mm.
Got a nice
little dirty sound to it.
Like the TV? That's what I've called it.
Telly.
Back of our arm.
Can you put this on the telly? No, the telly on the telly. Yeah, telly.
What is a telly?
What do you have?
Telecaster.
What do you have?
Telecaster.
So we're going to move on a bit, aren't we? And ask some questions.
We got some
fan questions, I believe.
Let's move on to some fan questions.
Erica, you've got them, haven't you?
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Who's been calling the golden shot this week?
Well...
That is an old English...
the golden shot?
Old English people in my age will get that.
You must have seen my face go, I don't know.
Wait a minute. You're English?
Could have been.
Apparently, I am.
There's a rumor going about.
So first question.
From the mothership.
You guys ready?
Yeah.
What were the sets like? Did you guys have to travel to any interesting places?
Mm.
Yes.
Good question.
Soundstage 5. And then over to soundstage 3.
And 18 and 19.
And 18 and 19.
18, 8, and 9 were our main ones.
And then occasionally and 5.
The interesting thing, I'd love to, on 18, which was where the bridge was,
right.
Your, what do you call it?
Engineering.
We didn't hang around
it's
that.
It's blanked from my mind. But that's where Hitchcock shot Rear Window, amongst other things. Sunset Boulevard was shot there.
Oh, that's fantastic.
On stage 9, I loved it. It was affectionately known as, I think all the way back from the Next Generation days, as Planet Hell. that's where they set up every week.
Who was that famous swimming actress? Esther Williams.
Esther Williams.
There was a swimming pool underneath the bridge. That was where she shot all of her films.
On 18.
When you were you guys were shooting over it.
When I'd come out of my trailer and look up at that veranda, that walk across the top of those offices, that's where William Holden met the girl in Sunset Boulevard.
He had his office there, yeah.
Wow.
Next question. If during the filming they found their character saying something that flatly contradicted something from a previous one, and Trek fans are known to be fanatical about detail, could they say anything about it?
Well, you could always say something about clarifying what you were doing. But I mean, I'll speak for my character specifically. There was an episode in, I don't know, season three or four where as the engineer, they were having a bet as to how far the ship would go on any given day. And I apparently had gotten the answer wrong for 30 days in a row. So I called the office and I was like, hang on a second. If you want to make him a good old dumb Southern boy, you're going to do that with this scene.
I don't need your help. Yeah.
So I said, I think we should cut this, or he should know the answer. He should know exactly how fast and how far they're going every moment, every day. And they went, yeah, well, all right, Connor, maybe you're right.
Yeah.
And they cut it.
Jumping back, I always remember when we could take people around the sets. I loved it when you could get the thin strip between the actual wall of the studio wall and the back of that warp drive. And there literally was a 70s disco wheel going round with some colored.
Covered in like aluminum foil.
Yeah, literally. Nice. And it would. And that was the warp drive. It was brilliant.
Did you ever have anything where you felt that you wanted to change something or clarify it as Saval?
Just a little. Follow me on this. A little detour. I did I did the one of the Voyager episodes and played a whole different species.
What show?
The Voyager. Star Trek Voyager.
So
the
you,
Voyager.
This
is how long it's been.
How many episodes of Voyager did you do?
One.
Just the one. And so they knew you from that. And,
I played a creature called the Okampan, and I had advanced ESP abilities.
Right.
Could, you know, read people's minds and had various powers. Telekinesis, yes. And
are you the only Okampian that they have? Okay.
No.
There Did was that come
a,
out
there
right?
Was a, there was a character named Kes.
There was another Okampa.
Kes.
Right.
Kes was an Okampan, and we hit it Okampan. Off. I read the script, and one of my signs. This is back before Enterprise. You guys had a looser approach to it, and I thought Voyager was wrapped a little tight after having come off Alien Nation, where you know the sky's the limit. We could pretty much do anything we wanted with a reason. And on Voyager, the script girl was right there on my whenever I messed with any one word of dialogue. There was one thing I was. One line I had that was A, I was supposed to say A, and I thought it was literatively incorrect, so I changed it to an because it was a vowel followed it. So it was an and such and so. And they said, well, I'll have to check with upstairs. And I'm like, okay. And there was another one that said, to make it possessive, I changed the line from the cloud to their cloud because it was a possessive thing.
Right.
It made
they
more
weren't
sense.
Having that either.
So I know they A were. To N and the to or the to there. And it took 40 minutes.
Oh yeah, no.
40 minutes to run up to the tower and get the okay from the producers and run back down.
They were very possessive about the lines they wrote.
It was an eccentricity, and I thought 40 minutes of downtime on that. Wow.
So moving on from the show, I don't know what you're talking about.
Sorry.
So when you got Saval, did you audition for it?
And I had auditioned for the folks on Star Trek, various incantations, like 9 times. And I thought, God, haven't they seen me enough to say, yeah, you know, I'll come in here and read it. I'll read it with an accent. I'll read it in Chinese. Sure. Go ahead.
So what was your take on a Vulcan? Because I have to say, I think playing a Vulcan was probably the most difficult role to play in Star Trek. Because one...
Did you play a Vulcan?
I couldn't. It's not my wheelhouse.
This was beyond, it was beyond him.
It was beyond me. But, you know, you've got... One, you don't have any emotions. You don't show much emotion. Yet as an actor, you've got to nuance that, noodle it to the point where, you know, you are expressing yourself with some of it to enhance what you're saying.
Interesting that you should say that, because I thought I figured I got hired based on my reading. So I dissected my reading and the performance I gave in order to prepare for this. I, of course, had seen the previous incarnation. I'd seen what Leonard Nimoy had done, and I sort of took that for a cue, and then based on what I read, and I thought I had it together, and I showed up with my lines known, but I still had many questions about the Vulcan. I hadn't seen every episode of it, and I thought, well, I'm a little unsure, but I guess I'll just go with what I did in the reading, and we were about 20 minutes from shooting my first scene in the pilot. And Rick Berman was on the set, the exec producer, and I walk in full costume, ready to go, ready to set.
In a flowing white robe.
He says, you look like a Vulcan ambassador. I said, well, thank you, Rick. I'm not sure I feel like a Vulcan ambassador. He goes, what do you mean? I said, well, I'm not sure I understand the Vulcans. And is it that they have no emotions? And he goes, oh my God. He goes,
is it, boy, do you need more money?
He says, which is it? Let's take a walk. We walked around this set, and he told me about the Vulcans. He told me, far be it from having no emotions, they have volcanic emotions. They erupt with emotions. They realized they were going to destroy their species unless they figured out hundreds of years ago how to sublimate their animal passions. Mm. And I thought, wow, is that more interesting than what I had planned?
So they're like Irish.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I thank you for that. Thank you. I wanted to hug him. I think I did hug him.
And you live and learn.
You have a whole new appreciation for what they're doing. So I thought, well, now that is so much it's harder to do, of course. You know, you're playing a being with no emotions. You can play it like a robotatron. And I thought, wow, to experience these emotions and passions and have them wanting to just erupt and putting a lid on it.
As an actor, that's much
more interesting to do.
Indeed.
Right. It's almost, you know, it's always good for an actor to have, even for just themselves, a secret.
Yes.
Because you can see it in
the boiled sweet. Mm.
The boiled sweet. Yeah. Yeah. Which is
for those for you kids at home.
it's hard candy in America.
It's hard. Oh yeah, sorry.
Hard candy.
I mean, people might not know what the hell we're talking about, but you've got a bit of hard candy at the back of your mouth there, just caught in your molars there, and you're just secretly sucking on that hard candy, and that's your secret, and that gives you this extra.
You actually challenged me one day. To do that, you're like, yes. I want to see that you've got a boiled sweet in your mouth.
Yeah.
And I did this and I was like, listen.
And then I said, show me Blue Steel. Very good.
So how
I like Blue Steel better.
How for you, what was the conflict? I mean, sort of in your preparation or who you are as an actor to know that you had to go to that place to find the Vulcan.
Well, I was, you know, that talk with Rick is sort of, I had no choice.
Right.
He told me the truth. And once having the truth, I couldn't proceed the way I was going to. I thought, oh, now you're giving me the truth about the Vulcans. I have to do something about that. I have to do much better than what I did in the reading, which some actors, I suppose, would just say, nah, I'll just do what I did in the reading. But that wouldn't sue me. I figured... I figure I like this show. I like the script. So I want to stick around. So I want to do it the right way. And I want to,
at that point was Saval just, he was, you were in that first scene was the clang on the, the sick bed bay. And good scene.
Yeah.
And so you didn't think, I mean, at that point, Saval, had they given it away that they wanted to make him a recurring character, or were they playing close to their chest?
No, I was hired for the pilot and nothing else.
For the pilot, right.
So I thought...
But was there any mention of maybe you'd go for... Because they sometimes dangle that.
It's an implied thing. It's an implied. You know, you're reading for a pilot, maybe it goes to series, and maybe they'll take you along, or maybe they won't.
Right.
You learned, so okay, go on about elbowing your way into a proper part.
Yeah, exactly. I said, I wouldn't mind a semi-recurring role on a iconic sci-fi show. So I said, I'm clearly the impediment to what the humans want to do on this one.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to make myself a foil to Archer's hero. Right. I want to be his impediment. I want to be in the way. Whatever the humans come up with, I want to recommend to the council that they don't go with this and right. keep humans down.
Drama.
So that was my driving force. And in the pilot, I raised my voice. I let it creep out. I let myself rise above the holding down of the emotions right. for just a split. I flare. And he's taken aback and he says, raising your voice to make a point, you have been on Earth too long. Mm. And I thought, this is a great key to my character.
Right.
I've been on Earth too long.
Right.
I've risen to the rank of ambassador, a high position, but like I've been on Earth too long.
Like it's Madonna going to London.
Much like that.
Madonna here.
I'm gonna intervene here real quick. We've got some live questions coming in on social media right now, which have to do with what you just talked about. This is an iconic role in an iconic sci-fi series. One of our questions is, what is your favorite performance outside of your Star Trek roles?
Outside of Star Trek.
You did a very small movie with Dominic Keating, I seem to remember.
Yes.
We did. That was a fun time, though, wasn't it?
It's called Plugged.
Yeah, Tim Russ directed that. That was a lot of fun. Short movie.
Plugged was a gas.
Yeah.
The question was not which one did I have most fun on, because that would certainly be it, working with Dominic Keating. It was so much fun working with you on that. I remember the remember the coffee scene?
Yes. Yeah. We played a couple of detectives trying to solve a murder, and the whole thing was that each scene was plugging some, product. And it was just shameless.
Marketing.
It was a very spoofy, satirical piece. And
somehow I missed this one.
I'll be sure to show it to you in the shuttle pod as we drift through space, Commander.
Again? I have to watch it again?
It's all we've got. It's either that or Charmed.
So back to what work are you most proud of?
That.
Yeah,
I gotta say, I had the most fun. I did Alienation,
which I loved.
Was the most fun.
Loved.
That was the most fun aside from Plugged, but that was the most fun series. They really let us loose. We were the kids gone wild.
I remember going back home from seeing you for the first time and saying to my girlfriend,
"You're in love.
Look, the dude from Alien Nation is on the show. I loved that show. Wow. Really? I really did. Yeah, nice. And I was so sad to see it go. It lasted.
Give me a quick thumbnail sketch premise, because I don't know it.
Well, it's from a movie, James Caan film.
Right. Alien Nation. And James Caan, Mandy Patinkin played the alien.
That's right.
It's a race of aliens that crash land on Earth out in the desert. And they, once all the military surrounding and what, and they figure it out. It's a slave ship. These Tinktonese were slaves, born and bred to serve their masters, the overseers. Mm-hmm. And they're taken out of the ship and assimilated into society.
Ronald Reagan naturalizes all. Makes them Americans.
In the show. Yeah.
In the show.
And it becomes a detective show.
Wow. Yeah.
Well, one alien.
Was it a sort of, sorry to butt in, but was this a sort of allegory for communism or something?
No,
secret agents living amongst us?
It actually was more of an allegory for racial tensions. Black and white. Here's these aliens assimilating into our society.
Right.
And putting up with... speciesisms. God, I can't
remember. Speciesism?
Species. It's not racism, speciesism. But it's speciesism.
Speciesism. Right. Who was the creator of the show? Was it someone you know?
It was Kenny Johnson. Kenneth Johnson.
Who also did The Hulk, and he did V.
Gotcha.
Short Circuit 2.
How many seasons did you run?
We ran one whole season.
Only one.
And then they repeated it, so it sounded like it was two. It felt like it was two seasons, but it was just one season.
On which network?
Fox.
Well, it was actually Fox's very first primetime drama.
Was it really? Yeah. Right. So
that was fantastic. So
are you guys ready for some Star Trek trivia?
Yeah, I think so.
Sure.
Because this really gets the energy going.
A bit of Star Trek triv. Come on, then.
All right.
What do you get if you win?
The winner gets a drink from the producers, and the loser has to stay after and do the promos.
And clean up.
And clean.
Dominic, would you like to start first?
Go on, then.
All right. Which Trek movie featured the first entirely CGI sequence in film history? A, The Motion Picture. B, The Wrath of Khan. C, The Search for Spock. Or D, The Final Frontier.
So what? Easy.
Oh, you know this. Do you think you know this?
So easy.
I know this.
I'm going to go, and I'm only going to do this because of, you know, the dating of CGI rather than consciously knowing that there would be a sequence in one of these movies. I'm going to go with The Wrath of Khan.
That is correct.
Wow.
Oh, read it and weep.
Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan featured the first ever entirely CGI sequence in films. It's the scene in the movie during which the Genesis device is deployed and is shown destroying and then terraforming an entire planet.
See? I knew it.
Oh, yeah. So easy.
You lying.
It's the chronology of the movies I know more than the movies themselves. And I just thought, you know what, CGI, they probably would have spent some money around the Wrath of Khan years. And God damn it, I was right.
All right, we're going to go with Gary. We'll go around. Gary, which Star Trek captain was widowed? A, Jonathan Archer. B, James T. Kirk. C, Benjamin Sisko. Or D, Jean-Luc Picard?
I think it's D, Jean-Luc Picard.
Nope.
Oh.
Wrong. Oh. I know. Can I steal it? It's Benjamin Sisko.
It is.
Oh, do you know, I thought it might have been Archer.
What show were you on?
I was on that show.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll explain that real quick. In the Battle of Wolf 359, where the Borg were invading the Federation in the middle of the Next Generation, Sisko's ship was one of the ships on the front line in that battle. And he was the first officer of the ship, and his wife died, and he was trying to save her, but he was only able to save his son. So she died and was left behind on that ship, so he hates Picard as a result of that battle. And the launch of Deep Space Nine and the pilot, he has a standoff against Picard because he's still...
Is this done as exposition in the show? Or is it actually...
You watch it, you see it.
Oh, you see it happen.
The opening of Deep Space Nine and the pilot is the Battle of Wolf 359.
Very cool.
Yeah. All right. Are you ready, Connor?
Yeah, so ready.
Great. Which Star Trek series has a female chief engineer and what is her character's name? A, Next Generation. B, Deep Space Nine. C, Discovery. Or D, Voyager?
Voyager.
Yes.
It was played by Roxanne Dawson.
Nailed it.
And she played B'Elanna Torres.
Yeah.
Nailed it.
Wow.
Nailed
it. Wow. And that was a grand slam.
I've got a lot of time on my hands.
And what else did she do in Star Trek?
She directed us several times on Enterprise.
As well as a number of other...
She made her directorial debut.
I think I was directed by her.
In fact, Roxanne has... I mean, exploded, isn't it?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Huge.
Yes.
Yeah. She got her start out, obviously, on her own show, on Voyager. That's where her and Robbie Duncan McNeil got going. But her sort of standalone, come as a director, was on our show.
I think she cut her teeth on our show.
Mark, you're next.
Oh, okay.
Okay, who played Lieutenant Bobby on the original series? A, David Soule. B, Orson Bean. C, Glenn Roddenberry. Or D, No One Knows.
No One Knows.
Correct.
Really?
Wow.
No one knows. Wow. You may not remember Lieutenant Bobby, who appeared in 12 episodes of the original series, but you're in good company. No one else remembers him either. The name of the actor who played him has been lost to time.
Bobby? Wow. Where's Bobby? We don't know who Bobby is?
Where's Bobby?
In this day and age, that's hard. You can't quite believe that. Really? They really don't know.
12 episodes.
I find that very interesting.
12 episodes.
Wow.
Okay. Was he a red shirt? What was he?
It's Bobby.
Bobby.
It's Bobby.
Nobody knows.
You always do a good walk.
All right. Do we got to go? Are we going around Robin one more time?
Yes, we are. All right, Dom. Who puts Picard and the Enterprise crew on trial in the episode Encounter at Farpoint? A, the Klingon High Council. B, Q. C, the Archons. Or D, Pa Wraith.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I don't know the episode, as you might imagine. But I've got a funny feeling there'd be good mileage in Q.
Yes.
Yeah, nailed it. Good job.
You nailed it.
I'm a natural.
According to a poll from a 2013 Star Trek convention, what was the seventh best Star Trek film ever?
I'm sorry, what was that question?
The seventh?
That's fucking tough.
The seventh.
And I don't say fuck lightly.
Oh, wow. What was the seventh best?
I think Gary's going to be cleaning the building.
Call me a cab, please.
Star Trek 7.
Star Trek 7. Yeah, I haven't the foggiest fucking
idea. What's the question? What was the worst, according to a poll, the worst, the seventh best Star Trek movie ever?
Yes, the 2013
that is
so convention.
That is one of the classiest.
Now, how does it go? Isn't it Isn't it the even numbers ones are not very good? So it's an even numbered movie.
Oh, I've got to meet the person. I've got to meet the person who sent in that question.
Usually, I have heard that the 1, 3, 5, and you know.
I think it was called Weekend at Worf's.
I'm going to answer it for you guys.
I want to steal it. Can I try to steal it? You give the answer.
Galaxy Quest.
What?
Oh, Galaxy seventh Quest. Best Star Trek movie ever, Galaxy Quest.
That's a trick question.
Yes.
Great.
I've got a Galaxy Quest story. I nearly made the cut for that one. So here how it goes. Yeah, just worked with Tim Allen on his second movie for Disney, Jungle to Jungle. I had a good part in that, opposite him and Martin Short. And I got very friendly with Tim, and God bless, his next movie was going to be Galaxy Quest. And he took me to the producers, and I got pretty close in the running for, I forget the character's name, the red shirt.
Guy.
Guy. Well done. And I didn't get it, obviously. Erased. Sam Rockwell, it kicked his career off.
Wow. Yeah, he's a comedy genius.
2 years ago. Not bitter at all.
Wait, you got all the way?
I went pretty close, yeah. Wow. I think from what I understand from Tim, it was between, you know, me and him at the end. I'd been in town 10 minutes, really. I mean, it was, you know, the early 90s, wasn't it? Yeah, 96, 97.
Isn't that amazing how it works that second you get to town, something like that happens?
Yeah.
I think it happens to, not everybody, but happened to me, happened to you. Did it happen to you? Where you get into town and something really cool happens, actually doesn't happen. You get very close to it.
Oh, very close.
And then you think, oh, very close. This is a breeze.
Yeah, I got a good kickoff like that. I remember going to one of my early auditions, and John Leguizamo was there, and he was already John Leguizamo. John Sessions was there. There was just, you know, and lining up in the corridor with me. And I remember ringing my manager, JP, and saying, you know, he was there and they were there. And he just went, damn, welcome to the major leagues.
Yeah, that's excellent.
And,
all right. Connor, yes, what ma'am. Deep Space Nine character is a Trill symbiont? A, Quark. B, Dax. C, Worf. D, Odo.
The lovely Terry Farrell plays a Dax symbiont.
Mm. Yes.
Very, very well.
You are nice, correct. Connor.
I mean, come on.
Oh, come on.
American cheese.
I can feel you just literally go, I don't believe it.
I know this one too.
Did you guys go over these questions?
We did not.
I think so.
Honest to God, truth. I had no idea. But now. I think they served me two softballs.
All right. I would not have known either of those you got.
This was originally extra credit because it's really hard. During the original 5-year mission, what deck of Enterprise contained Dr. McCoy's quarters? A, Deck 23, B, Deck 5, C, Deck 9, D, Deck 13.
Deck 13.
No.
There is no Deck 13. Don't be silly.
It was 9. I knew
whatever it is.
I knew it was 9, but I said 13 because I surprised me.
Yeah.
It's deck 9.
It's deck 9.
And why was it even alluded to that there was a deck number for McCoy's?
Well, just adding 13 to it, this is a trick question.
There's no deck 13.
There is on anything.
On anything.
McCoy's assigned quarters were 3F127 on deck 9, section 2.
What's a very good idea for a new Star Trek movie? Deck
13. Lower deck.
our official tally is Dominic 2. Mm. Gary 0.
Nope.
Connor 2, Mark 2.
Oh,
do we have a sudden death?
Should we have a sun?
Come
death?
On,
should absolutely. We have a buzzer?
Check it out.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm going to. I'm going to.
You know, this.
One.
I got a claim file. This is when you told me about this this appearance here. Nobody told me that I had to pack my nerd to come down, and you know, I left it at home. I'm sorry. I wanted to be a stronger contender here.
All right, so for the last question, this is a multiple choice question. You're going to have to call out your name if you know the answer. Tiebreaker. Which character has appeared in more episodes than
Connor.
Ooh.
Yes, give me the answer, Connor. Oh, this would make me very happy.
Character, or not actor, character.
Character.
Because I think you're thinking of Vaughn, aren't you? Bless you.
No.
Yes, Vaughn. You were. No. I'm Vaughn Armstrong, by the way.
I think yeah. The answer is from Fletch, John Cocktosin.
What now?
Is that not it?
That's wrong. Mark.
An idea.
Mark. Worf.
Yes.
Worf, of course. He was in two series of it, for crying out loud.
It was in two series and including Star Trek VI, right.
Lieutenant Worf has appeared in more episodes of any Trek franchise than any other character, thanks to the fact he was added to the cast of Deep Space Nine for several seasons after his run on The Next Generation.
AKA Michael Dorn, of course. And two shows.
Oh, shit. That means I won.
You did.
Yeah.
Gary and I are going to clean the building and wrap up all the cords.
Why don't you start in the bathrooms and I'm going to get the. I'll get a sweeping out here.
Because you're the guest, right?
I'm just going to go for a pee now.
Yeah.
give him something to clean up.
Give him something to...
Gary, I wanted to ask you...
Yes?
Well, one being maybe the premier line flubber on our show.
Oh, is that me?
No, he was.
I was, truly.
I usually...
You didn't have many scenes with him.
Truly, you look at the bloopers for the end of every season.
Okay. I used to get jealous.
I
literally, at the Christmas parties, I'd be kind of pissed.
I know.
Because they'd all be howling, half drunk. Oh, he's so funny. Honestly.
He's so bad.
They'd have to dig something tiny out of the book for me.
And Dom's like, I knew my lines. I knew my lines. What am I going
to
say?
I'd be boring people to death at the party. I'm just professional. Anyway.
I choose to flub it. Well, yeah. I choose to do it.
Well, so let me ask you, were there, for your experience on the show, pranks, flubs, mishaps that were memorable?
Not so much on Star Trek. Alienation, of course.
Oh, yeah.
But Star Trek.
Oh, tell us a good Alienation flubber.
Oh, gosh, there were so many. I'm like you. I was the star of the cast party with so many F-ups. But it's sort of, I don't know. If you can relate to this, I started feeling a little less than good, even though I'm getting all this attention for screwing up the line so bad. But you know how when you really want to nail the line and you're almost there, and Alienation had a lot of all in one shots.
Oh yeah,
that start in the jail and they go through the this.
So don't screw it up.
And I would always get the last line of the scene. Camera's been rolling for a minute and 20 seconds, and it's right there, and it settles in on a perfect over-the-shoulder on you, and you just kind of...
That's pressure.
That's pressure.
That's pressure,
baby.
That's pressure.
That's pressure. And everybody's looking at their watch, waiting to go to lunch, and you're holding them up because it's take 17, and all in one, I say, you freaking artsy-fartsy directors, you got to do this... You know, this steady cam all in the one winding through, get this, and then come down on.
Yeah.
It's too much pressure.
It's a lot of pressure.
You know, and you want to be casual and just kind of off the top of your head. And like I said. Anyway, it's just.
I've been in similar situations when it's like, I mean, look, whenever you walk onto any set as a professional actor, it's like, you got to bring it, man. I mean, there's nothing worse than you walk onto as a guest star or someone else's set. And they've all been together for maybe 2-3 years.
You're the new guy.
They're all tight, and nobody's really, you know, they're friendly enough, but you know, they're not, you know, no one's making any real efforts here. And you know, we talked last week with John Billingsley, that poor lad who played the Vulcan, who had a tough time on our show.
Yeah,
it's
John had a tough time on our show as Dr. Fox.
Oh, that
no, he was a Vulcan.
Oh, there was a Vulcan guest star actor that really, he ended up, I mean, it went down in the sort of legions of our storied, you know, series that he walked off. He literally walked off the set and he went home. And they found.
I heard about that.
Yeah, it was a sad. I mean, we shouldn't make light of it because he was in a lot of trouble. But they found one of the ears just flung in the back of that dumpster as you go down. They called it Godfather Alley.
A meltdown.
And that ear was pinned to the clipboard in the second AD's office for the next 3 years.
Yeah, pinned up.
I swear to God.
Were they disrespect. Trying to make a joke out of it?
I swear to God, I wished I'd taken that. That ear would be worth money right now.
Oh, God. I mean, this happened to me actually relatively recently. During the pandemic, I was, I've got this seldomly recurring role on 911.
That's right.
As the bomb guy. And
I think I saw you briefly in a...
It is briefly always.
So they've got a gobbit. They've got a trailer running right now for the new series. And I swear to God, I think it was...
Oh, you might have because...
I think, yeah.
It was coming. Yeah.
It was a bomb moment. And
there's a bomb.
And there's four of you. And I went, I think that was Connor.
Could have been him. But so we were shooting this during the pandemic. And, you know, really, there's very few things you can sort of grasp onto when you go on set. And one of them is that, you know, as a guest actor, you know your stuff. You know, mm-hmm. You come in and you're not the problem.
No.
And I had come on and it was pretty much 9 scenes with lots of action and interspersed dialogue. Well, I thought foolishly, well, we're going to go in order. Well, no, they condensed the whole thing. And so I then had to relearn the lines as sort of as a speech. And I got there and you can tell the second that it happens in rehearsal that you're like, oh no,
yeah,
I don't have it. And so we go to shoot there's always a couple words that can trip you up. In my case, can be any of them, but we got there. It's everybody. We're in front of a building. I've got to come up and tell them what's going on. And damn it, if I couldn't get it to the point where after a few takes, I got a ballpoint pen and I was like, and I went into this scene and thank God we had masks on because during the pandemic. And I walked up there and I'm in front of all these guys and I'm like, dirt to dirt, to dirt, to dirt. We're going to go again. And, you know, lunch is getting delayed. You know, there's penalties being paid. And, there's this. There's nothing worse. There's nothing worse. There's nothing worse.
It is. The sweats come on.
I thought I was never coming back.
You literally get the sweats.
Oh, yeah.
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 It's grim.
Yeah. It's awful.
You got to cheat.
You've got to
At a point, you've got to cheat. I would take.
I was going to say, I thought you wrote the lines then on the inside of your mask and you could read them through your mouth.
Well, I wrote certain lines that were giving me trouble and in the all-in-one shots, moving through the squad room and then ending up over here and having an exchange here and then getting this and picking it up and then keeping on the dialogue going. I would actually go, I would work with the cinematographer, making sure that all my lines were out of sight. I would put one on the computer. So I'm talking to my friend.
You would place them around the room.
Place them around the room, and then we walk over here, and then there's a guest actor. And I say, do you mind terribly? If it doesn't throw you, keep looking at me as I'm walking by, because I'm going to put this on your forehead. Are you all right with that? I know it's.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. I'm sorry. So I would do that all along this long walk, and... And damn if it didn't work.
Yeah, I know.
So yeah. And that God bless the guest actors. They would go along with it because they saw I was in trouble.
I'm going to slightly out Brent Spiner now, and he's not going to take kindly to this. But you know, he did those guest episodes on our show. They actually had idiot boards for him.
Oh, God bless him!
Literally. I never stop taking the piss. Whenever I see him, I'm like,
Joanna Cassidy.
They had cards. They had cue cards.
Good morning, Dominic. Yeah.
You know, I will say this. Like Joanna Cassidy, who did our show, she had the same thing. And she didn't even, she was like, I'm not going to learn that.
No,
you can write it down. That's an old school thing that I was never, ever privy to.
And if you could do it, if you can pull it off and the audience doesn't know, God bless. And that's a skill.
Yeah.
That's a rare skill.
I'm pulling it off on this show. by the way. Nice.
It's on. It's, can you see my forehead? There are lines on my forehead.
It's on the back of a scotch. Where's that bring us to in the show then? Where are we?
We've
Captain?
Got one more. We've got one more song, I believe.
We got another song.
Song. Yeah. A song that I wrote.
It is a song that you wrote.
Come on.
What's it called? I don't have you in my earpieces.
This is called the Cosplay Hop.
I wrote that.
Ladies and gentlemen, I believe we have one more song.
And this, may I interject?
Please just, do.
This is a song written out of my desire to honor all the great people that we meet at these conventions, the cosplayers. People
the cosplay,
who,
yeah. right.
They go, they make their costumes or they buy them and they come there and they just celebrate. They have friends that they only see at these conventions.
Yeah.
And they communicate with each other and they show up and they cosplay. And for the performers, us actors who are in street clothes, just watching this parade of people dressed up like us, it's
really
wonderful. It's great fun. And I just wanted to honor them in this.
The cosplay hop.
The cosplay hop. Here we go.
It's got a good beat, easy to dance to.
Got the Peggy Lee click.
Gonna go and do my convention things. Got my costume, I'm going now. Been waiting a year for the opening. Gonna cosplay and show them all how. Got my Starfleet Communications Officer shirt, yeah. I chose cause I'm looking in red. But my buddies all say I could really get hurt, cause we're ready to end up dead. With my Star Trek Bluetooth combat, I cross the bridge just to disrupt.
That's fantastic.
That's a good song.
Yeah. I've got one brief cosplay story. I was at Dragon Con several years ago, and they really bring it there in Atlanta.
They do.
They really do.
Yeah.
And I'm sitting there signing autographs, and up walks five really tall, statuesque women in sort of the Beverly Hillbillies, you know, big giant dresses. Uh-huh. And I stopped and I got up and I said, well, who are you all? Who are you all? And they were like, well, we're Winnie the Pooh. Look at all the colors. There was like light blue. There was like, you know, light brown.
Screaming Winnie the Pooh.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And then I stopped and I was like, well, wait a minute. Where's Piglet? And they just split their arc and out walks this tiny woman dressed in light yellow.
Unbelievable.
It was brilliant.
That's brilliant.
And they also built them themselves, of course, because I think that's generally what you do in the cosplay world.
They grew Piglet.
Yeah.
In a jar.
They cosplay for themselves and for fun, but I think really they cosplay for us, for our entertainment, because we sure appreciate them.
Absolutely.
Right. It is. It's so much fun. Well, it's a truly remarkable thing, isn't it, when you see people dressed as you, as it were, at the con.
I think it's also kind of remarkable that that opportunity and that lifestyle, that hobby has become so embraced, particularly, not only within the convention community, but I think as a rule, you know, be who you are, do what you want,
right.
And you know, get your freak on, and do it honestly, we love you for it, really.
Yeah. We do, we do.
There's a girl in Australia that's taken it to the nth degree. You've met her, haven't you, Kathleen? Shout out to you, Kathleen. I met her for the first time on a catamaran going around Sydney Harbour, and we'd had a couple of drinks. John was on the boat with me, and the girlfriends, she was like, you've got to show him, go on then. And she pulls down her cocktail dress, and there I was on her shoulder blade, about the size of a pineapple.
She's the bus driver.
My head. Right? I don't know that she's a bus driver. I don't know what she does for a living. And I was pretty like, oh, my God. The first time I tattooed on her shoulder blade, me as Lieutenant Malcolm Reed, I was pretty impressed. And, I said to her, well, don't lose any weight, love, and moisturize. Press to the point.
Oh, my God.
until she goes, yeah, no, that's not all. And she pulls down the other shoulder, and there's fucking Connor Trinneer. No! Sod off.
Wait, are you serious?
Serious. No, as I sit here.
And I've met her, and then maybe subsequently she put Garrett on there.
I think she went deep, man.
You mentioned pineapple, Dominic. We're going to throw out
that
another.
Was a bit Freudian, wasn't it?
We're
I said pineapple.
We have a question on the internet.
Don't you remember the inner workings of Malcolm's mind?
Apparently his favorite fruit was pineapple, and Yul gave me a pineapple birthday cake show, which, yes, that scene has been erased from your mind.
Was I there that day?
I don't know. Malcolm didn't remember. And frankly, he didn't care.
So the question is, there was spent nearly a whole episode trying to find out what Malcolm's favorite food was. It was pineapple. Dominic, what is your favorite food? And the producers would like to add on, what is your real life favorite food, all three of you?
I was asked this recently. If I had to take one cuisine with me to a desert island forever, I think it would be sushi. I know it's a bit wanky, but yeah.
It's amazing. It's awesome.
Yeah.
I like this game. So I'm not the only one, probably, but so...
You play, what is that? Yeah, you've asked me this question, haven't you?
Both of you. So you are on a deserted island. Mm. You are allowed one author.
Yes.
Their complete works. You are allowed one band or musician's
work. Right.
And you are allowed a dessert. Now, with the dessert, you're allowed, like if you like cake, you get all cake. You like ice cream, you get all ice cream.
Right.
Or you can be specific, like, I want tiramisu or whatever. And then I would add to that, what is your one meal? So, Gary, what do we have?
Meal? Steak.
Okay.
Steak and baked potato.
All right.
So America.
The other is what?
The other is author.
Your favorite author?
Author. Stephen Hawking.
It's the rest of your life.
Stephen Hawking's. Because he's such a brilliant man and makes the quantum physics explainable and understandable to me. And maybe through his teachings, I can learn how to get the hell off this island.
I got to say, I have read A Brief History of Time at least three or four times. Yeah.
I mean,
and I still don't remember it at all.
It's the most
You could read it a lifetime, and it is boggling.
It's profound. The title itself is profound.
Yeah.
A Brief History of Time.
Yeah. It's
mind-boggling. So, music?
Music, Led Zeppelin.
Okay.
All right.
If I heard the Led Zeppelin, their first album, I could take that for the rest of my life.
That was the first album I ever bought. Houses of the Holy. I still have that cassette.
Wow.
Yeah.
I used to listen to that in this stoner's van before I'd walk into calculus class.
All right.
I'd have Zeppelin blasting in my head, and I walk into calculus class. And I fell in love with calculus because of that.
That's awesome. Brilliant.
All right, so
dessert. And then dessert.
Dessert. Ooh. God. Strawberry shortcake.
Okay.
I don't mind a bit of strawberry shortcake.
All right,
don't mind it much at all.
Well, he has asked me this before, and I suppose I was just thinking it through. I think I'm going to go with the same answers. I could take Dickens. I could certainly read Dickens for a lifetime. There's a lot of it. It's either that or, I guess, Shakespeare. But, yeah, Dickens. The music, I think I might have said Zeppelin to you. If it wasn't that, it was Bowie.
Oh, I thought you were going to say the Sons of Kirk, but
I'm not familiar completely with their
work. We'll play a bit for you.
I think I could go with Mozart, too. Let's go with Mozart.
Mozart?
Yeah.
Your author?
Dickens, Mozart. Dessert. Favorite dessert? Now that I'm on statins, fuck it, ice cream.
Yeah. There you go. And meal.
I mean, I tell you, my mum used to make a mean roast lamb, garlic, roast potatoes, you know, peas and carrots, the whole nine yards. And that was always, whenever I went home, I'd always like, Mum.
She goes, oh, God, it's a lot of work, you know.
I like that. I like peas and carrots, too, but I could never let the peas touch the carrots.
Really? You're
gotta
one of
those. Got to separate them, yeah.
You're a separator.
Is that a spectrum thing? I would go with, and it's funny how it's changed over the years. Shakespeare. It's always been Shakespeare as the author. These days, it's the Beatles. It used to be Zeppelin or the Stones, but the Beatles. Ice cream. And then if I was having my last meal before they were going to put me in front of the firing squad, I would have Coco Van.
Coco Van.
Coco Van.
Or as chicken and a lorry, we call it back home. Right.
Chicken and veggies and a couple of potatoes.
Right, sir. Would you like more?
I
would like to amend my Led Zeppelin,
yeah.
Who I just absolutely adore, and the Beatles. I want to amend it to Chopin.
Okay.
If I could hear nocturnes. Yeah.
It is by, Desert Island, yeah. I have to say, and that's why I go with
Mozart. I get swept away by Chopin. So yeah. I've discovered him late in life, mm-hmm. and now I play the piano, and I play Chopin, and it just sets me free.
Oh, that's awesome.
I just melt into the keyboard, and he's so brilliant.
I quite agree.
How long have you been playing piano?
All my life, really.
Wow.
I started at 7 years old and did recitals and contests, MTA, Guild, and all that. And I just kind of walked away from it and discovered rock and roll.
Oh, cool.
And then later in life, I've just discovered the piano and Chopin.
Mm.
Chopin just sets me free.
That's beautiful.
I was going to ask, do we all remember meeting on set for the first time? Or was it more the conventions that we got to really know each other? I mean, I didn't have many scenes with you, did I?
I think you
and I had a lot of scenes.
We had some scenes together. Yeah. And yeah. Occasionally with Dom, but mostly it was through the conventions.
It was, wasn't it? That's where the friendship really sort of strengthened and became.
You're not the asshole Soval at all. You're a good guy.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. And then what we really got to know each other was on that Tim Russ film.
Yeah, that's right, on the plug movie. Just God bless.
Such a strange one.
Do you know, I used to see Tim almost every week naked. I know, isn't that a strange thing? Member of the YMCA Hollywood.
Oh, right.
You are British.
That's which has gone away. And
an institution.
It's iconic. I mean, it's been there about 100 years, I think, and it doesn't look like it's coming back. But yeah, Tim's a very keen rackets player. And he would come, literally, we'd see each other 3-4 times a week in the locker room at the Y.
Yeah.
And I think we kind of really miss things like that. I have to say, it's a whole new world, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, on a brighter note, it has been an absolute joy having you along.
Yeah, so nice to have you.
Thank you
for making the trip down from Eastern Washington to come visit us.
Couple of airports, and I'm here.
God bless you, mate.
People ask me, well, you're living up in Spokane Valley. Don't you miss L.A.? I go, no. But I miss my friends.
Yeah.
Aww.
I miss my friends.
Poor L.A. Right. I know.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, it's been such an honor to have Gary Graham here this afternoon to talk about your experience on Star Trek, to catch up, to hear about your life, and to just, you know, pardon my French, but shoot the shit with you, man. Are he and I cleaning the floor first?
You're in the bathroom, and I'm doing the carpet.
You guys don't get to eat lunch. That's
all right. But again, this has been Shuttle Pod. Thank you so much for joining us, and we will see you next week.